refusal to sleep with him. Ms. Sterling was growing frustrated with how we shared lust but nothing else, and my father had stopped talking to me altogether, though my mother continued to call me every day. 7 days after the wedding, I walked out of college, heading for Smithy's waiting car. When I reached the black Cadillac, I found Smithy leaning against the passenger door with his cheap suit and black Ray-Bans. He rolled a lollipop in his mouth from side to side, offering me a nod.
Your turn to drive.
Huh?
Big man's order. He said it's cool since there are no highways on the way home.
I'd only had 2 lessons with Wolf since he'd promised to teach me. My husband didn't have much time outside of his work life, but I knew I could do it. Wolf said I was a natural, and he wasn't loose in the compliments department. Besides, Smithy was right. The way back to the house was urban and busy. It was perfect for practice. All right, I bit down a giddy smile. Smithy threw the keys in the air, and I caught them. He pushed off the car and signaled to the coffee shop on the other side of the street.
Nature's calling.
Feel free to pick up. He came back after 5 minutes, all smiles.
If your husband ever asks, please don't tell him I even mentioned that I'm capable of peeing. He just might cut off my dick for reminding you that it is there.
He surprised me with the banter, and I shook my head, smiling. Wolf's not like that.
You're kidding, right? Wolf cares about everything you do or are exposed to, including annoying radio commercials and that street you hate because there's a stray cat living there.
We need to find it a home, I pointed out, sliding into the driver's seat and dragging it forward to adjust it to my small frame. I fixed the mirrors, then sighed and turned on the keyless ignition. The vehicle purred to life. I wrapped my fingers around the wheel just as Smithy slid into the seat next to me. Ready?
As I'll ever be.
He gestured with his freckled hand toward the horizon. He had a mane of red-orange hair and matching eyelashes.
Take us home, Frankie.
It was the first time he'd called me Frankie, and for some reason it made my heart flutter. My mother called me Vita Mia. My father hadn't called me anything at all recently, and Wolf referred to me as Nemesis or Francesca. Angelo referred to me as Goddess, and I missed it. I missed him. I hadn't seen or spoken to him in a lifetime. I contemplated texting him to check if he was fine, but I didn't want to enrage my husband. Instead, I asked Mama if he was doing okay during our daily chats. She said that Angelo's father, Mike, was livid and complaining to Papa about my husband's unfair behavior toward his son, which only put more strain on their already problematic relationship since my sudden marriage. Things didn't look too good for the men of the outfit these days. I slid out of the parking space and started for Wolf's mansion. Our mansion, I guessed. I rounded the corner, my heart slowing down from the sudden rush of adrenaline of sitting behind the wheel, when Smithy groaned.
That Volvo behind us is tailgating the fuck out of our ass,
his Irish accent came out when he was upset. It unsettled me to be in a car with an Irishman from Chicago, even though I knew Smithy had no affiliation with the underworld and had probably been thoroughly checked before he accepted the job as Senator Keaton's driver. I glanced in the rearview mirror and noticed 2 people I immediately recognized. 2 made men who worked for the Bandini family. Meaty, 6'5" type of beasts who were usually sent to handle business that required less conversation and more muscle. The one behind the wheel flashed me a rancid, rotten-toothed smirk. Shoot.
Speed up, Smithy ordered.
The street is crowded. We could get someone killed. My eyes danced frantically, and I gripped the wheel tighter. Smithy shifted in his seat, glancing backward, no doubt regretting the moment he'd offered to let me drive.
They're about to bump into us, No, cancel that. Crash into us. Hard.
What do I do?
Take a left. Now.
What?
Now, Francesca.
Without thinking, I took a sharp left, heading out of the busy neighborhood we'd been driving in and galloping west. The road was clearer, and I could gain more speed, though I was still scared to push the gas pedal all the way down. I understood what Smithy tried to do. He was hoping to lose them. But he didn't know these men chased people for a living.
"Get on the highway," he shouted.
"Smithy!" I yelped, at the same time he took his phone out of his pocket and wiped his forehead.
"Focus, Francesca."
"Okay, okay." I took another sharp turn, rolling onto the highway and checking my rearview mirror every few seconds to see if I was creating a gap between the two vehicles. My heart was bursting with fear. My entire body pricked with goosebumps. What were they doing? Why were they after me? But the reason was crystal clear to me. I'd shamed their family by getting engaged to Wolf when I was supposed to get married to Angelo. On top of this, my husband just put Angelo in jail for a night or two over his affiliation with the outfit, and with Mike Bandini's accounting firm, which, I assumed, was now under investigation by the IRS. The sound of metal scratching metal deafened my ears, and the Cadillac lurched forward as they hit us from behind. Heat rose from the doors, and the scent of burnt rubber leaked into my nostrils.
"Foot on the accelerator, sweetheart. Put some distance between us," Smithy screamed, spit flying out of his mouth as he scrolled through his phone with shaky fingers.
"I'm trying." I gripped the wheel harder, hyperventilating. My chest rattled and my hands shook so bad I felt the car zigzagging between the lanes. The road was relatively clear, but cars were honking and sliding to the shoulder of the road as I tried to lose Bandini's soldiers.
"What is it?"
Wolf's voice boomed inside the car. Smithy connected him to the Bluetooth. I let out a sharp exhale. It was good to hear his voice. Even though he wasn't there, I immediately felt a bit more in control.
"We're being chased," Smithy said.
"By who?"
My relief was immediately replaced with dread. Maybe he would be happy to get rid of me. He'd achieve the same level of revenge over my father without having to endure my presence.
"I don't know," Smithy said.
"Bandini's soldiers," I shouted over the car's noise. There was a pause as Wolf digested the information.
"Angelo's father?"
he asked. Another crashing sound exploded in the air, and our vehicle flew 3 feet forward as they smashed into us again. My head hit the steering wheel. I let out a breathless groan.
"Francesca, where are you?"
Wolf's voice grew tighter. I looked around, trying to find signs.
I-190,
Smithy said, snatching my school bag from under his feet and looking for my phone.
"I'm going to call the police."
"Don't call the police,"
Wolf shot out. "What?" Smithy and I yelled in unison. Bandini's guys were getting close to us again. The Cadillac coughed and made a terrible sound. The bumper was scratching over the road, dragging over the concrete. It reminded me of the noise vehicles on the video game Grand Theft Auto made before they burst into flames. Angelo and his brothers used to play that game all the time during our summers in Italy. Angelo always won.
"I'm coming for you. Take the Lawrence Avenue exit."
I heard Wolf picking up his keys. I didn't remember ever seeing him drive. Ever. Either he was driven, or he sat next to me as I drove around the neighborhood. "I'm not a good driver." I tried to keep my emotions under control, reminding him that he shouldn't be as sure as he was of my abilities to get us out of this in one piece. My eyes looked for the exit he was talking about, my eyeballs running manically in their sockets.
"You're an excellent fucking driver,"
Wolf said, and I heard him zipping through traffic, breaking approximately 2,000 laws based on the honking and yelling in the background.
Besides, if something happens to you, I will blow up the entire outfit and put every made man in Chicago behind bars the rest of their lives. And they know it.
I think it's because I married you, I muttered, blinking away the tears so I could spot Lawrence Avenue better. Smithy shook his head in my periphery. It wasn't the time or the place to discuss this.
It's not your fault, Wolf said. I threw his son in jail for the night, and his firm is under IRS investigation. He wants to get back at me through you.
Is it working? My voice shook. I heard the engine of Wolf's Jaguar straining against the speed. He didn't answer me. Another bump to our car. I held back a sob.
They're running us off the road, Smithy yelled, slapping the dashboard. Can I draw a weapon?
Don't you dare, Wolf barked. If a hair on Francesca's head accidentally moves.
Just as he said that, the loudest crash of all rang in my ears, at the same time that the airbag shot out, knocking our heads backward against the headrest. White powder floated in the air like confetti. The Cadillac screeched and rolled to the side of the road, and I felt something hissing underneath us. I couldn't move. I couldn't open my mouth. I couldn't even groan. My nose felt like it had been pushed to the back of my head. I wondered if I broke it. I pondered if, now that my face was all jacked, my husband would finally lose interest in me. That was the last thought I had before I passed out.
Francesca? Nem? Talk to me,
Wolf demanded in the background. A dark screen spilled over my eyes as my eyelids gave in. I wanted to answer him, but couldn't. I heard him slap his wheel.
Damn it all to fucking hell. I'm on my way.
I dragged my eyes to Smithy with whatever energy I had left. His head began to bob as the airbag shrank back, and he groaned in pain.
She's fine, Smithy croaked, bleeding from her mouth and nose. Her eye doesn't look too good either.
Fuck,
Wolf yelled. Smithy unbuckled himself and reached across, unbuckling me too.
Should I?
Smithy started at the same time Wolf barked.
Yes, draw your weapon. And if they get close to her, by God, kill the bastards before I do, because I would be much less humane.
I passed out after that. It felt like a thick blanket of nightmares covered me, suffocating and scorching hot. I was there, but not really. I didn't know how much time had passed. The first thing I remembered were the blue and red police lights shimmering behind my closed eyelids, and Smithy explaining to the police officers that we didn't see them, and that they took off without getting out of their vehicle. Their license plate was missing, of course, but they were probably just punk kids who wanted to vandalize an expensive new car. Then I felt Wolf's arms wrapping around me and carrying me, bridal style, to an ambulance. He tucked me in a gurney and barked when someone else tried to touch me.
Sir, a male paramedic snapped. We need to put a brace on her neck and strap her to a backboard to stabilize her in case of spinal injuries.
Fine. Be gentle, he snapped.
When I opened my eyes, I noticed that Wolf wasn't alone. A chubby man in a fancy suit with a black mane stood next to him. A paramedic shined a penlight into my eyes, patting my body and looking for any visible injuries. My forehead was bruised, and my entire face felt swollen and sore.
If she lands in the ER, we'll need to issue a statement,
the guy next to Wolf was texting on his phone, still staring at it.
It's going to look bad.
I don't care what it looks like, my husband retorted.
When an airbag goes off, you have to go to the hospital. If you don't, you have to sign an against medical advice form. I would strongly suggest we just take her and get her checked. I heard a soft female paramedic's voice and blinked my eyes open. She was an attractive woman in her late 20s, and I wondered, briefly, if my Lothario husband was going to put his schmuck in her, too. Suddenly, I despised her, to a point I wanted to tell her I was feeling fine just as long as she left us alone.
Darling, Wolf probed, his fingers skimming my face gently.
Too gently for me to even believe they were actually his.
We're going to take you to the hospital.
No hospital, I groaned into the palm of his hand. Just home, please.
Francesca.
It's fine. The airbags went off, but didn't touch us, Smithy interfered.
She's going to the hospital, Wolf argued.
Sir, the man beside Wolf tried to argue. I wondered if he was like that because there were people around us, because he ought to be nice and gentle to me in public. The thought scared me to death because something deep inside me wanted to cling to this new side of my husband and never let him go.
Please, I just want my bed.
My voice broke mid-sentence as I tried hard not to cry. I had a split lip I was pretty sure was going to reopen if I did. The gorgeous paramedic tapped his shoulder, and I almost mustered the strength to bite her head off, but then he shook out of her touch casually.
It's just shallow bruises, I croaked.
Get a private doctor to my place in an hour.
Wolf snapped his fingers in the suited man's direction, then turned back to me.
Home, I told him.
Yes, home.
Wolf brushed hair from my face.
Thank God, the suit next to him muttered under his breath, already making the call. Shut up, Zion.
Yes, sir.
I woke up in my bed some hours later, after a doctor's visit that stretched for almost 2 hours. Wolf was sitting on the couch in front of my bed, working on his laptop. The minute I cracked an eye open, he placed the laptop on the couch, stood up, and made his way to me. I curled under my sheets, too sore to be touched. But he just sat next to me and kept his hands in his lap.
How is Smithy? I asked.
He blinked at me as though the question itself was ridiculous. Was I speaking in English? Pretty sure I was. Then a smile hung on his beautiful face like the moon, and I knew with a good portion of melancholy that I was in love with this cruel beast of a husband, that for another one of those glowing, genuine smiles, I would butt horns with my father, slay dragons, and hand him my pride on a silver platter. It was depressing to admit, even to myself, that I was under his thumb.
That's the first thing you ask after being chased off the roads by mobsters. How the help is doing?
He brushed his thumb across my cheek.
He is not the help. He is a driver and our friend.
Oh, Nemesis.
He shook his head, his smile widening as he pressed a gentle kiss to my forehead. The gesture was so touching, I was on the verge of bursting into a sob. Without asking if I'd like water, he brought the glass on my nightstand to my cracked lips, helping me take a few sips.
Sterling is worried like crazy. She went to the diner down the road and got you enough waffles to build a Hansel and Gretel candy house.
I'm not hungry.
I shifted in bed. Somehow, everything hurt even more after a few hours. It wasn't actually bruises, but the impact of the adrenaline on my body as it wore off.
Shocking.
My husband rolled his eyes. Senator Wolf Keaton rolling his eyes exasperatedly was a sight I never thought I'd see.
But I would love a cigarette.
I licked my lips, tasting the salty flavor of my dry blood. He walked over to my desk and took out a thin Vogue cigarette from its pack, sitting by my side and sliding it between my lips. He lit it for me with my Zippo, like in an old black-and-white film. I smiled around my cigarette.
Are you going to make it a habit?
He asked.
Make what a habit?
Scaring me to death.
Depends on how much you piss me off.
You forgot to tell me you almost got assassinated. By my father, no less.
He sent a shit aim,
he responded, some of the metal returning to his voice.
He was only half serious about killing me. I do, after all, hold his daughter hostage.
To that, I said nothing. He got up from my bed, his lithe body no longer tensed.
I'm glad you're okay.
He was going to leave, I realized. My eyes glanced at my wristwatch. It was 3 in the morning. He needed to be up early for his flight to Springfield. But I couldn't bear the idea of him leaving me today after he showed me affection. I didn't want to lose it. Didn't want us to go back to what we were a few hours ago, before my life was on the line. 2 strangers who enjoyed dry-humping each other and shared a dinner table every once in a while. I knew without a shadow of a doubt that he wanted to go back to the previous state, and that if he left, we would. No, I croaked when he was at the door. He turned around slowly, scanning me. It was all in his expression, the dread of knowing what I was about to ask. To him, I was an asset. Now that he knew that I was okay, he could go about his day. Or rather, night. I don't want to stay alone tonight. Could you? Only for tonight? I blinked, hating the desperation in my voice. He peeked at the door again, almost longingly.
I have an early morning.
My captor has given me quite the comfy bed. I patted it, blushing under my bruises. He shifted from foot to foot.
I need to let Sterling know that you're okay.
Of course. I tried to make my voice sound chirp, blinking back the tears. Yes, she's probably super worried. Forget what I said. Besides, I'm tired. I think I'll fall asleep before you close the door. He nodded, leaving the door ajar. I was too tired to mourn my unfulfilled request. I fell asleep a minute after he left my room with the half-smoked cigarette swimming inside my water glass, a habit that made Wolf cuss under his breath as he collected the glasses after me. When I woke up the next day, the clock hit 7. I tried to stir myself awake, but felt massive weight pressing against my body. God, how badly was I hurt? I could barely move an inch. When I tried to wiggle my right arm, reaching to the alarm clock to slam the button and stop its chirp, I realized that it wasn't soreness that stopped me from moving. My husband was sleeping behind me, his stomach pressed against my back. Still in his suit, his breaths were deep and silent. I could feel his penis digging into my butt through our clothes. He had morning wood. I felt myself blushing, biting down a smile. He returned to my room. He spent the night in my bed. I asked for something, something he had told me explicitly would never happen. And he gave it to me. I put my hand over his arm, which circled my midriff, his nose and mouth pushed alongside my shoulder blade. I prayed for one thing that morning. That this wasn't a sweet lie, but a forbidden truth. Lies I couldn't deal with. But finding a truth and digging that vein until it gushed out, I was up for that challenge.
Chapter 13. Wolf. Long before I realized that Francesca Rossi was in existence, I'd studied her father's workday closely. Seeking revenge was a full-time job, and the more you knew, the more thoroughly you could ruin. I looked for weakness in his business and loopholes in his contracts when, actually, his daughter was his most valued possession. Both more fatal and more personal than any strip club I could shut down. The problem occurred when I realized that Arthur no longer treasured his daughter. As far as he could tell, she was no longer his ally. And to make matters worse, she married a man who was determined to kill his business, not inherit it. The game had changed, Arthur allowed Mike Bandini to target his daughter, because his daughter was also my wife. And my wife, I foolishly proved to him, was important to me. My Jaguar stopped in front of Mama's Pizza restaurant in Little Italy. It was a quaint place that smelled of freshly baked sourdough and tomato soup, and my goddamn sorrow. The business lost mountains of money every month, but made for a great money laundering venue. It was where the outfit had their daily meetings. Whatever dark feelings I harbored toward Mama's Pizza weren't enough to keep me from making my point to those idiots. Smithy got out of the vehicle and opened the back door for me. I waltzed into the restaurant, ignoring the plump, disoriented lady behind the counter, and went through the door behind her. Stepping into the dim room, I found 10 men sitting around a round table. It was the old, checked white and red Italian BS, complete with a yellow, half-burned, unlit candle. Behind it sat my father-in-law. Round tables broke hierarchy. Last time I'd been to Mama's Pizza, the table was square, and Arthur Rossi was at the head of it. And behind him hung a glassed window covering shotguns. Picture-effin-esque. I sauntered toward him, the annoying woman behind me yelling and apologizing in one breath, and flipped the table with all its contents, beer, wine, water, orange juice, and breadsticks, over the laps of the men in front of it. They sat there, mouths slacked, watching me through a curtain of shock and anger. I was standing in front of Rossi, his dress pants soiled with the wine he'd been drinking. Next to him sat Mike Bandini, Angelo's father, who slowly began to rise from his chair, no doubt about to either run or point a gun at me. I grasped his shoulder, digging my fingers in until I met his bones through his skin, then pushed him back into his chair and kicked it across the room. The chair's wooden legs skated a foot back from the force. I glimpsed at Arthur, pleased to see that his palm was still wrapped up from the night he stained the white sheets with his own blood. "How's your face today, Bandini?" I smiled good-naturedly at Angelo's father. He sucked his teeth in, smirking at me. "In one piece." His eyes looked left and right, trying to assess everyone else's reaction to my surprise visit. They were pale as ghosts and crapping their pants. I wasn't the police. Them, they could deal with. I was the man who had the power to get White fired, and worse, plant Bishop and Rossi in such deep shit they'd never climb out of it. But getting rid of me didn't work either, and now it was out of the question. I had my driver and 2 security men parked up front. "That's good to hear, because my wife's face isn't. In fact, her nose is still bleeding." I threw a fist to his nose without warning, making all the men around us stand in unison, only to have Arthur motion for them to sit down with his hand, his lips thinning into a fine line. Mike's head reared back, his chair flying backward and falling to the ground, him inside it. I took 2 steps and swallowed the distance between us. "Her ribs are sore too," I added, kicking Mike in the ribs. Everyone around us sucked their teeth in, furious with the vulnerability of their situation. I took a handkerchief out of my breast pocket and wiped my hands, sighing theatrically. "Last but not least, her lips are sore. I'm going to let you choose, fist or foot." I glanced down at him, cocking my head. Waking up in my wife's bed was an unpleasant surprise, but feeling her ass digging into my erection with little finesse as she tried to please me was definitely something I could get used to after what seemed like a lifetime without actual sex. I knew she was too sore, but still couldn't resist the urge to dry fuck her under the sheets. So I did just that. I unbuckled my dress pants and pressed my shaft against her ass cheeks. After I came on her nightgown, I left her room, ordering Miss Sterling to make sure that she drank, ate, and didn't do any heavy lifting. Right before I picked up the phone and had Zion hire a bodyguard for her. Fist! Mike grinned, his teeth covered in blood. A mobster, after all. Foot it is, then. I don't take any orders from you. I smashed my Oxford-clad foot right into his face and heard a crack as his nose smashed to pieces. Stepping back, I strolled around the room. I, too, had better things to do with my day than spend it with men who ruined my hard work for a living. I'm feeling charitable today. Maybe it's the bliss of being a newlywed. I've always been a hopeless romantic. I scanned Arthur's twisted face and the soldiers around him, who sat with the kind of electric defiance that rolled off their red-blooded bodies. Fists balled, chins high, feet tapping over the floor. They were dying to beat the hell out of me, but I knew I was depressingly untouchable. I wasn't always like this, though, and Arthur Rossi was the sole reason for my weaknesses. So I'm going to spare the bastards' lives who did this to Francesca, but I thought a gentle reminder, and trust me, this is my idea of gentle, was more than necessary. I have the power and the means to shut you down completely and kill every part of your business. I could make sure all your recycling and sanitation projects are terminated. I have the power to purchase all the competing restaurants and bars to yours, throw money at them, and watch as they put yours out of business. I can make sure your families don't have a breadcrumb to eat for dinner, and that your medical bills are unpaid. I could send the FBI to your underground gambling joints and whorehouses. I could reopen cases that have been dormant for years and hire enough investigators to populate your streets. I took a deep breath, and I could bleed you dry of every dime you own. But I'm not doing that. Not yet, at least. So don't give me a reason. Arthur frowned. Up until now, he stayed silent. Are you implying that I harmed my daughter, you slimy little shit? Bandini's muscle did. I pointed at his friend, who was standing up from the floor and wiping his face of blood. Arthur turned to Bandini sharply. Oh, brother. He didn't even know. His empire was falling apart, his power diminishing by the minute. It wasn't necessarily a good thing for me. A weak king is a mad one. Is that true? Arthur spat out. He put my son in jail the day of their wedding. Mike spat blood into a trash can. I walked over to Mike, bawling his collar in my fist and tugging it so he looked up at me. Get anywhere near my wife again, and I shall consider it an act of war. A war I am more than equipped to finish, and in record time. I warned. Understood? He averted his gaze from me, unwilling to see the determination in my eyes. Fine, Stronzo. Fine. Same goes for your son. I catch him near her, and he'll be sorry your wife was drunk enough to permit his conception. Angelo can do whatever he wants, he gobbled, waving his fist in the air. Leave him out of this. We'll see about that. Rossi? I said, turning from Mike. Arthur was already standing up, refusing to go down without a fight. I'd dreamed of this moment for many years, holding such power over his head. And now, when I finally had it, I felt nothing but disdain and wariness. Coming here was an uncalculated risk. These men had no moral compass, and if Francesca ended up 6 feet under, I'd never be able to forgive myself. I was the one who got her into this mess in the first place. Put your soldiers and associates on a shorter leash, I ordered, pointing at his face. You mean like your wife does to you? He patted his pocket and produced a cigar, sticking it between his lips. She seems to have taken over your better judgment. You'd have never showed up here months ago, and you wanted my head even back then. Arthur said. I have your head. You're playing with your food, Senator Keaton, instead of going in for the kill. You're enamored by a teenager, and that wasn't in your plan. Give me your word, I repeated, feeling a tick of annoyance flickering behind my eyelid. Arthur waved his hand. I will not hurt my own daughter, and will make sure no one in this room does either. She is, after all, my flesh and blood. Don't fucking remind me. On the way home, I put Bishop and White on a conference call. I knew two things. They weren't going to turn the conference call down, aware that I had too much ammo on them, and that they didn't want me to leak anything over the phone for exactly the same reason. The problem was that I was sick and tired of corrupt assholes getting their way, especially when innocent people were being hurt in the process. Especially when one of those people was the woman who had my ring on her finger. I heard that you paid quite a visit to our friend. Bishop was golfing by the sounds of carts and sunshine laughter on the other line. White remained silent. How are you doing, Preston? I asked, getting comfortable in the back seat as Smithy zigzagged through the busy Chicago traffic. I did not acknowledge Preston's remark about my visit to Arthur because, as far as I was concerned, I'd never been there. I took one of Francesca's Zippos out of my pocket, flicking it on and off absent-mindedly. Something, hell if I know why, possessed me to take it with me when I left her room this morning. I'm fine. Is there a particular reason why you're asking? Preston grated into the phone with audible annoyance. White took a labored breath, waiting for my answer. It sucked when the only person holding the cards in the conversation was a green politician with a vindictive streak. Just wanted to check on how you're gearing up for the elections next year. I stared through the window. It was nicer to sit in the car with Nemesis around, not because we shared pleasant conversation, that was rarely the case, but because she always smiled at Chicago like it was beautiful and fascinating and busy, especially for her. She appreciated the small things in life. I'm fairly sure I am doing way beyond my wildest expectations, at least according to the polls. Bishop clucked his tongue, and I heard him mounting his golf clubs to his cart. No wonder Rossi did business with him. The hedonist asshole didn't have the term work in his dictionary. Nothing a few bad press releases can't ruin, I assume. I quipped, getting to my point. It was hardly a social call, after all. What are you insinuating? White barked, and I could practically see the spit flying out of his mouth. God, he was an awful-looking creature. I hated him a little extra for being a corrupted cop. A dishonest politician I could handle. All politicians were corrupt, but some of them were still good. Being a corrupted cop made you a piece of shit. End of story. White represented the Chicago Police Department, something my late brother was a part of. I'd hate to think how Romeo would feel had he known White was the commander-in-chief of operations nowadays. I'm insinuating that you're still not doing your job to my satisfaction. My wife was in a car chase yesterday. Bandini's people. How is she doing? Bishop asked, not even a little interested. Save me the pleasantries. Life's too short to pretend we give a damn about each other. A. Do not threaten my campaign under any circumstances, and B, give me direct instructions and I'll pass them through to the source you need help with, Bishop offered. I don't think you get to talk to me about circumstances, I snapped. The Jaguar rolled into the gates of my mansion. Today I'd done something I hadn't done in my entire career, not since I graduated from college. I took a day off. I wanted to make sure that Francesca was feeling well and didn't need to pay a visit to the hospital. Smithy opened the door for me. I stepped out. Right now, to soothe my growing anger with your client, I highlighted. I'd kindly demand that you tell him to keep his associates and himself far away from my wife. It's in everyone's benefit, yours included. Fine, White bit out. Bishop stayed silent. You too, Tiger Woods. I heard you, he clipped. Are you going to hang this over our heads for a while now, Keaton? Because you're starting to make enemies everywhere. First with you-know-who and his crew, and now with us. Do you have any friends left at all? He wondered. I don't need friends, I said. I have something much more powerful. The truth. I found my wife in her vegetable garden, sucking on a thin cigarette and tending to her plants. She wore a long blue skirt and a white dress shirt. There was something strong and determined about her choice to follow her parents' rules, even after they'd disowned her completely. When I first met her, I thought she was a puppet, a shiny, pretty toy designed by Arthur Rossi that I could break. The more I got to know her, the more I realized how wrong I was. She was humble, modest, resilient, innocent, and well-cultured. The night of the masquerade, I ridiculed her for excelling in what her parents wanted her to become, completely disregarding the fact that being proper and well-behaved was much more daunting than being another defiant, rebellious, 21st-century kid who wore short skirts and fucked everything that moved. I mocked her for being rotten before finding out that she was a compassionate, good-willed woman. Francesca wiped the sweat and soil from her forehead, turning around and walking to the shed to retrieve a bag of fertilizer. She stopped and rubbed her forehead, wincing. The bruise there was shallow but nasty and green. I stepped toward the shed, reaching behind her back and taking the heavy bag from her. Why are you so stubborn? I accused as I carried it toward her vegetable garden. She followed me in her little boots and little everything, really. She was so pocket-sized, I often rehashed the night I was inside her, relishing how sweet and tight she'd felt. Not because of her virginity, but simply because she was her tiny self. Why are you always so... you? She followed me, a bounce to her step. I stopped in front of the vegetables, realizing for the very first time how spectacular she'd made this garden. She grew actual things. Tomatoes and radishes and peppermint and basil. Flowers spilled from fresh pots, and there were rows upon rows of flower beds framing her little garden. It wasn't my style. Too busy and colorful, a mishmash of too many species, sights, and scents, but it was the one thing about this place that truly made her happy, other than Miss Sterling. Who else would I be? I answered, setting the bag next to her plants, careful not to squash them. I stood up straight and wiped my hands. Someone else? She teased. Like who? Angelo? Only an idiot would utter his name aloud at a time like this, but I made it perfectly clear that I could be a real jackass where my wife was concerned. I actually quite like you being you, she said, hitching one shoulder up. I rubbed the back of my neck, feeling abnormally raw. You need to slow down.
I am. I took it easy today, did my homework, and only came out here a half hour ago. I'm getting ready to harvest the first round of veggies and send them off to the school down the road. It's all organic.
She turned to face me for the first time, and my heart squeezed at the sight of her black eye and cut lip. I chucked her under the chin. That's not slowing down. That's speeding up. Don't make me do something crazy.
Like what?
Like abduct you. She chuckled, looking down at her legs, her cheeks flushing.
You treat me like a kid.
Please. If I did to kids what I want to do to you, I'd spend the rest of my life in a secluded cellar. And for damn good reason. She crouched down, fingering the flower beds for dead leaves she collected, then threw away. I stuffed my fists into the pockets of my dress pants, watching her back. Nemesis had dimples of Venus on her lower back, and the need to sink my thumbs into them as I ate her out from behind smashed into me. I cleared my throat. Pack a bag and some snacks. We're leaving.
Huh?
She still gardened, not even bothering to look up. We're going to my cabin on Lake Michigan tomorrow for the weekend. Getting some rest is clearly not on your agenda, so I'm making it. She twisted her head to watch me, squinting at the sun and using one of her hands as a visor from it.
It's no trouble. I'm not hurt, Wolf.
You look like you've been beaten up, and people are especially good at speculating. I need to get you out of town. It was only partly true. Having my new wife parade her banged-up face in public was less than ideal, sure. But I didn't want any company other than her, either. Sterling was always sniffing around us, and Smithy was a general pain in the ass. In addition, Bishop wasn't wrong. I did not, in fact, have any friends. Distancing myself from my enemies for a couple days wasn't the worst idea I'd had. I needed a breather, and, quite frankly, Nem was the only person I could somehow tolerate right now.
I have a lot of homework, she said.
Take it with you.
I'd hate to leave Miss Sterling alone.
She'll have security stay with her. We're leaving alone.
That's against protocol.
Fuck protocol. There was silence. She was chewing her lip, which meant she was trying to come up with another obstacle. You can drive a portion of the way to the cabin, I offered, sweetening her deal. She perked just as I knew she would. Her experience with Bandini's assholes did not deter her from learning. It was part of the reason why I couldn't hate her, not even if I tried. She was driven, and the best part was that she didn't even know it about herself.
Really?
Her eyes shimmered with excitement, clear blue like the summer sky.
Even after what happened?
Especially after what happened. You aced it. How's your forehead?
It looks worse than it feels.
It looks beautiful. Of course, uttering those words wasn't an option. I turned around toward the balcony, retreating from the garden and my wife. When I reached the glass doors, I stopped, stealing one last glance at her again. She was crouching back down, resuming her work.
You won't have to worry about them anymore, I said.
Them?
She blinked. The list was growing by the second. First her father, then the Bandinis. Every asshole who ever had the faintest idea to hurt you. I went into my office and locked myself there for the rest of the night, not trusting myself to go to her room for my nightly feast on her without sleeping next to her. As it was, I had a control issue. I lacked it. She had all of it.
Chapter 14. Francesca. It took me an entire hour to unwind behind the wheel. Not only did I worry about ruining Wolf's precious Jaguar, the flashbacks from Bandini's guys slamming into the Cadillac from behind as they chased me. But I also didn't feel overly comfortable around my husband. After spending the night with me, he hadn't come to my room last night. We were going to his lake house. Was he planning on sleeping in different rooms there, too? Frankly, I wouldn't put it past him. I had no one to advise me about our situation. Cosmo and Marie Claire, my only sources of relationship advice, didn't exactly cover the subject of an arranged marriage with cruel, severely emotionally stunted senators in the 21st century. Ms. Sterling was biased. She'd tell me anything I wanted to hear to ensure that I was happy with my husband. My mother was too busy trying to save her own marriage, and Clara was the closest thing to a grandmother I'd ever had, so, yeah, gross. I could call Andrea, but I feared becoming a charity case at this point. Always disoriented, forever clueless. That left me to stew in my thoughts all the way to the cabin on Lake Michigan. When Wolf called it a cabin, I thought he meant somewhere quaint and modest. In practice, it was a luxurious estate, crafted from rock and glass, boasting an outdoor hot tub, a direct view of the lake, elevated wooden balconies, and an architecturally mesmerizing rustic charm. It was tucked among cherry trees and lush green hills, far enough from civilization without having that eerie air. My heart swelled at the prospects of spending time with my husband so far away from everyone. But mixed with the excitement was a dash of fear.
"I feel another string of nemesis questions coming my way."
Wolf was sitting cross-legged on the passenger seat, flipping my Zippo between his strong fingers. I munched on my lower lip, tapping my thumbs against the wheel. "Have you ever been in love?"
"What kind of question is that?"
"One I'd like an answer to." He paused.
"No, I've never been in love. Have you?"
I thought about Angelo. Then I thought about all the things I'd gone through because of my love for Angelo. I didn't know how I felt about him anymore, but I knew that lying to my husband out of fear was going to put me squarely in the same place my mother was struggling with right now. "Yes."
"Hurts like hell, doesn't it?"
He smiled to the view outside his window. "Yes," I agreed.
"That's why I refrain from the feeling," he said.
But it also felt good when it was requited. He turned around to face me.
"No love is fully requited. No love is equal. No love is fair. There is always one side that loves more. And you better not be that side, because it suffers."
Silence stretched until we parked the car outside of the so-called cabin.
"But you..."
He turned to me, smirking.
"You're smarter than to yield to your love."
"I don't love Angelo anymore, you fool." I wanted to scream. "I love you."
"Which is why I respect you," he added.
"You respect me?" He got out, rounded the car, and opened my door for me.
"If you're into milking things, I'd love for it to be my cock and not simply for compliments. You know I respect you, Nem."
The fridge in the cabin had been stocked with everything good and tasty. Freshly baked French buns sat on the counter. I wolfed down two with local strawberry jam and chunky peanut butter. Wolf hopped into the shower, and I did the same after him. Then he stuffed a six-pack of beer and a handful of individually wrapped brownies into my backpack and ordered me to join him for a walk. My forehead was still sore. My lip kept on opening every time I smiled. And I found out that my ribs must have bruised when I was put on the gurney, but I complied nonetheless. I began to second-guess our mutual decision not to take a honeymoon together when he threw my girly bag over his shoulder and led me to a paved concrete path surrounded by wild grass that whooshed in the cool breeze of the evening. The wind and the lake provided a sound more pleasurable than any symphony, and the view was a spectacular shade of purple and pink sunset, diving into rolling hills. We walked for 20 minutes before I noticed another wooden cabin up the hill from where we were. "What's there?" I pointed at the cabin. He moved a hand over his thick, dark hair.
"Do I look like a tour guide?"
"You look like a sour man, Senator," I taunted. He laughed.
"We could check."
"Could we? I don't want to trespass."
"Such a law-abiding citizen. If only your father would share the virtue."
"Hey, I frowned. He flicked me under the chin lightly. The gesture was growing on me, especially paired with the fact that I no longer believed that Wolf didn't have feelings for me, not after the way he held me the day of the car chase.
Sterling keeps telling me to stop doing that. Bunching you and your father together, I mean. It's hard.
Do you do it often? I winced as he took my hand and tugged me up the hill.
Not lately.
And why is that? I asked.
Because you're polar opposites.
As we went uphill, my breathing became more ragged. I was determined to make conversation to avert my thoughts from the fact I was definitely not in shape. I neglected my horse riding sessions in favor of school. Plus, I did have a question burning on the tip of my tongue. Are you willing to tell me why you hate my father so much now?
No. You can feel free to stop asking right now, because the day I'll be ready to share this with you is never.
You're so unfair. I allowed myself a sulk.
I never claimed to be. At any rate, the answer isn't something you'd like to know.
But maybe I do. Maybe it'd give me peace with the fact that he disowned me. He stopped in front of what wasn't a cabin, but a red and white barn.
The fact that he gave up his precious gem just because I touched it is enough reason as to why he doesn't deserve you.
And you do? I asked.
But, my darling, that's the difference between me and your father. I never pretended to deserve you. I simply took you.
I threw an arm over the barn's wooden gate, shaking my head. That's definitely trespassing, Wolf. I'm not going in. He jumped over the fence, making his way inside the barn without looking back. There was fresh hay scattered by the doors, and by the scent of moist soil and what my riding instructor liked to call road apples, horse poop floating in the air, I knew livestock were inside. I heard Wolf whistling from the depth of the open barn, clucking his tongue.
She's a beauty.
It's been 2 seconds since you left my side, and you're already flirting, I called out. The smile on my face hurt my cheeks. The sound of his throaty, gruff laughter filled the air. I pressed my thighs together, something empty inside me aching to finally let him in. I could have sex with him tonight. God, I wanted to have sex with him tonight. For the first time since our engagement party, I felt fully prepared for my husband physically. More than prepared. Needy. And even though Wolf was next to impossible to read, I did know this about him. He wanted me, too.
Come here,
he called, sounding surprisingly, perhaps even shockingly, like a young Italian boy from the variety I grew up with. It was the way the word rolled off his tongue that gave me pause, but I shook my head, laughing to myself. Wolf Keaton was as well-bred as they came. His late father was a hotelier, and his late mother was a Supreme Court judge. What if we get caught? My grin threatened to slice my face in half. I heard more whistling of admiration from the inside. He whistled like a street kid, but waltzed like an aristocrat. I could never pin him down.
We're good for bail, he drawled. Get your cute butt over here, Nem.
I looked left and right, ducked my head under the fence, and tiptoed my way inside the barn. When I got in, he grabbed my hand and pulled me close. Wolf enveloped me from behind in a hug, jerking his chin to one of the 4 stalls, the only one that was occupied. A gorgeous Arabian horse, completely black, save for her stark white mane and tail, stared back at me. Wolf wasn't exaggerating. She was breathtaking. And she blinked at me with her beautiful, tiny, and dense eyelashes. I pressed my palm to my heart, feeling it pitter-pattering in my chest. I'd never seen a horse so beautiful. Her eyes were calm and kind, and she bowed her head down, accepting the sheer admiration that must have shone in my eyes. "Hey, girl," I made my way to her, watching my pace, allowing her time to get used to me or change her mind. I put my hand to her muzzle. "What are you doing here all alone?" I whispered.
"She looks in good health to me,"
Wolf said behind me, leaning against